Blog Talk Radio.
Methogen was introduced into the English language in 1979 to refer to plants or chemical substances that awaken or are generic mystical experiences, or rather, I'm sorry, generate mystical experiences. It is used here in the spirit of its conception to distinguish the religious nature of these substances and the experiences they evoke from their effects on other in other contexts, for which there are other terms, psychedelic or hallucinogen. Once, when a journalist casually referred to peyote, which is a classic classic ethnogen, as a drug, a Huicol Indian shaman replied, "Aspirin is a drug. Peyote is sacred." We live in a time a great many voices are calling for spiritual renewal to help us address some of the problems that face humanity. The great spiritual theologian Matthew Fox is one such voice. He wrote at a National Academy of Science of a conference in 1986 exploring the mass extinction of plants and animals on our planet. Paul R. Ehrlich of Stanford University declared, "Scientific analysis points curiously toward the need for a quasi-religious transformation of contemporary cultures. And yet the way of the ethogens, or rather entheogens, one of the oldest and most widespread means of attaining a religious experience, is forbidden. Surrounded by miasma of controversy and misunderstanding, This problem was further complicated during the 1970s, 80s, and 90s by a war on drugs waged to eradicate the illicit, recreational, and non-medicinal abuse of drugs. Ethogens have been swept up in this artificial anti-drug crusade, even though they differ considerably from and do not rank highly among drugs of abuse. In fact, these substances, when used in a context to induce spiritual awareness, have been used with some success to alleviate addiction to narcotic drugs and alcohol. No less an authority than William G. Wilson, founder of Alcoholics Anonymous, observed, through LSD and some kindred alkaloids, I've had an amazingly bad press. There seems to be no doubt of their immense and growing value. And this is one of the most mysterious and important subjects in all religious history. Entheogens have figured prominently in the mystical practices of some of the world's greatest civilizations. They have been widely employed in shamanic societies, and their use continues today throughout the world. They alter consciousness in such a profound way that, depending on the set and settings, their effects can range from states resembling psychosis to what are perhaps the ultimate human experiences, union with God, or revelation of other mystical realities. Though they affect the psyche so powerfully, entheogens are among the biologically safest drug known. At the same time, nearly all the entheogens are listed in the Controlled Substance Act of the United States as having no medical use and high potential for abuse, and are thereby subject to the most stringent controls. Criminal penalties punished unsanctioned use, and virtually no use is sanctioned. And though it is technically possible for medical research proposals to be approved by the government, the process of applying for permission is long, expensive, and for researchers with temporal and fiscal constraints, prohibitive. And in a survey of former psychedelic researchers, the late Walter Houston Clark, professor emeritus of the Psychology of Religion at Andover Newton Theological Seminary, found that governmental red tape was the primary reason why they had ceased working in this field. It would seem that something is wrong if qualified investigators find it so difficult to obtain funds and permission to work in an area that most feel will open important doors to the future of humanity. To some extent, this problem can be attributed to the behavior of Timothy Leary, who took it upon himself to be a cheerleader for the cause of psychedelics, against the wishes of some of the colleagues at the time, among them Frank Baron, Aldous Huxley, Houston Smith, and others, felt that these materials were sacred and urged that they be treated with discretion and respect as was accorded the sacrament of Eleusis and alchemical elixirs and the like. Unwilling or unable to contain his enthusiasm, Leary popularized psychedelic drugs in the 60s and identified them as catalysts of a revolutionary social movement. He encouraged their use in ways that were seen as and often were hedonistic, irresponsible, or radically threatening to the status quo, thereby provoking the restrictive legislation we see today. But psychedelic drug prohibition existed long before Leary, and a persistent and often violent repression of entheogens commonly occurred when they were encountered by European colonists in their quest for the New World, to such an extent that they might have been lost for all time. Were it not for some painstaking research of Valencia and Gordon Wasson, the serendipity discovery of LSD by Albert Hofmann in 1938, and Aldous Huxley's description of his mescaline experience in The Doors of Perception, 1954, well, this repression may have succeeded entirely. And Leary's efforts assured that entheogens would not be forgotten again anytime soon. Millions were inspired by his zeal to explore these remarkable materials, and as a result, some of the leading minds of the 60s generation were enriched by them. 1993 Nobel laureate Kerry Mullis has gone so far as to say, "I think I might have been stupid in some respects, if it weren't for my psychedelic experiences. Everybody forgets that Steve Jobs of Apple was a user of mushrooms and psychedelics. However, the sudden impact of entheogens upon a predominantly secular materialistic society left no time for the appropriate educational, religious, or medical agencies to understand or accommodate their effects. Laws designed to protect citizens were counterproductive. They effectively curtailed professional research while having the opposite effect on an underground society. The result is that many otherwise law-abiding citizens continue to use these substances in secret for fear of prosecution. The dangers of entheogens are exaggerated by ignorance, and their potential virtue remains hidden. And direct experience of the divine is a goal of spiritual seekers everywhere. But without the proper framework to understand mystical experience, even glorious encounters with the divine can be problematic or confusing. By contrast, difficult experiences that occur within the context of a religious model can be valuable and transformative. In societies where ecstatic experiences are successfully integrated, it is because a suitable framework exists to define or structure them. Marcia Eliade considers this as essential element in understanding ecstasy. We must keep in mind the two essential elements of the problem. On the one hand, the ecstatic experience is a primary phenomenon. On the other, the historico-religious milieu into which this ecstatic experience has destined to be incorporated, and the ideology in the last analysis was to validate it. We have termed the ecstatic experience a primary phenomenon because we see no reason whatever for regarding it as the result of a particular historical movement. Rather, we would consider it as fundamental as the human condition, and hence known to the whole of archaic community. What changed and was modified with the different forms of culture and religion was the interpretation and evaluation of the ecstatic experience. Unfortunately, today, the interpretation and evaluation of the entheogenic ecstatic experience have been determined exclusively by a medical psychiatric paradigm that generally is not oriented toward appreciating mystical states of consciousness. This paradigm problem has been vigorously enunciated by Stanislav Grof, MD, who after 25 years of research concluded that neither the nature of the LSD experience nor the numerous observations made in the course of a psychedelic therapy can be adequately explained in terms of the Newtonian Cartesian mechanics mechanistic approach to the universe. Excuse me. I'm a little hoarse here tonight. What these people are saying, and it's so true, anybody has ever done psychedelics, they understand the effects that it has, you know. And the whole insanity of it is that, you know, like we digest these, we're forced to eat disguised, genetically modified foods and ammoniated and irradiated meats and you know, things that we have that we ingest that are absolute poison, killing us. Even cigarettes, you know, cigarettes. Everybody knows they're bad for you, but they're legal, and people are smoking all like crazy. So, why are they doing this? Why is this done? You know, why do they push the worst crap on humanity and deny it the best? You know, entheogens, marijuana, you know, drugs like this that are medicinal. They have tremendous value, and yet they're censored, they're mocked, they're thrown into the damned. You know, they're just damned. You know, and along with humanity. And that's why I believe that I'm a firm believer that there is an oversight committee, if you will, that. Be it alien or be it human, but there are those who go to the great extent, their mission in life is to control everything that could allow man to ascend, to live better, to, you know, to communicate with himself and God. And there's that carpet, there's that that's laid over humanity. You know, that God forbid if you breach it by getting high, or it's just, it's always been a mind boggler to me, and by doing this, governments, by doing this, imposing these draconian measures on simple plants, okay, people creates a bizarre effect, and they find that mankind cannot exist under those terms. You know, he'll find a way. He'll find a way. The sudden impact of estrogens upon a predominantly secular, I have read this part, but direct experience of the divine is a goal of spiritual seekers everywhere. But without the proper framework to understand mystical experience, even glorious encounters with the divine can be problematic and confusing. By contrast, difficult experiences that occur within the context of a religious model can be valuable and transformative. And societies where ecstatic experience is successfully integrated, it is because a suitable framework exists. I read that before, but I felt important to repeat that. I'm sorry, I think I have a bit of an allergy here tonight. What I wanted to read here was excerpt from 9th century Sufi tale, and it says, "A crisis may equal opportunity." Many contributors to this volume describe how the intelligent use of ethnogens could inspire peaceful, sustainable responses to the catastrophic state of modern society. The plot is thickening. Can the human species reverse these unfortunate developments of modernity? But don't speak too soon, for the wheels are still spinning. And this passage is a 9th century Sufi tale. It says, "When the waters were changed, once upon a time, Khidr, the teacher of Moses, called upon mankind with a warning. At a certain date, he said, all the water in the world which had not been specially hoarded would disappear. It would then be renewed with different water, which would drive men mad. Only one man listened to the meaning of this advice. He collected water and went to a secure place where he stored it, and waited for the water to change its character. And on the appointed date, the streams stopped running. The wells went dry, and the man who had listened, seeing this happening, went to his retreat and drank his preserved water. When he saw from his security the waterfalls again beginning to flow, this man descended among the other souls of men. And he found that they were thinking and talking in an entirely different way from before. Yet they had no memory of what had happened, nor of having been warned. And when he tried to talk to them, he realized that they thought that he was mad, and they showed hostility or compassion, not understanding. At first he drank some of their new water, but went back to his concealment to draw on his supplies every day. And finally, however, he took the decision to drink the new water because he could not bear the loneliness of living, behaving and thinking in a way, in a different way from everyone else. He drank the new water and became like the rest. And then he forgot all about his own store of special water, and his fellows began to look upon him as a madman who had miraculously been restored to sanity. And that's so true. I mean, that is just so true. If you can't fight them, join them, you know. Become crazy yourself. So anyway, I wanted to read this particular essay tonight. I think I'll have time. So many are grabbing for money, so many want a free lunch or are cynical and settle for entertainment, that the world has adopted shallowness as its habit, and what was once our birthright is now considered deviation. So squandered is our natural wisdom that he who seeks the source of the flowing itself, muse spring, is thought a fool. Who really desires laurel or myrtle either? Goddess lover, go and the rags you deserve is what they'll say, themselves pursuing more material gains. You'll find find few comrades on your chosen path, but for the reason I pray all the more that you will not falter. And that is true. That is so true. Reality that are so bring tears to my eyes. A connection with someone, depending on your talent, you know, you might be able to capture it that in a photograph or in a painting or sometimes in a phrase or a beautiful poem. It captures that reality, but it's impossible to explain a mystical experience unless you've had one yourself, and then you'll understand that it's impossible to explain to anyone, to some logical, rational thinking person that, you know, has no need for that kind of information. But as far as I'm concerned, everybody needs a mystical experience, and everybody needs one. And those who have had them, their lives have changed. Their attitudes have changed. And sometimes these experiences can be brought on by other people, by dire circumstances, by harsh, horrible things happening to you. But, you know, that you realize for that moment of clarity comes to you that this is all an illusion. What you're experiencing is an illusion. It's all an illusion of your making. Well, how did I bring this upon myself? The same way we all bring these things upon ourselves by living negatively, by living in shallow, depressed states of being. You know, I don't know how else to explain it, that we bring these things on to ourselves by following false gods, the false god of money, the false gods of fame, fortune, power, excess. Those powers, those gods, if you will, are false gods. It will lead you to destruction. But the real God, the pure soul, the purest God, is that one who has only beneficial and benefit, only got love for you, only wants the best for you. All you have to do is see him and believe him, and believe it, believe that that promise is there, that it can happen to you if you believe it. And in my life, I've seen it so many times. Sometimes I didn't recognize it, of course, but only later in retrospect did I say, holy cow, did that really happen? What a marvelous thing that was, that I was delivered from the bowels of hell, you know, places of, you know, sublime contentment. And walked out of hell, well, walked out of those situations that were bringing me into an oblivious state, you know, depression, or the state of ruin, you know. And you find that it's easy to walk away. It's easier than you think, because once you have been inspired by some glimmer of yourself in the future, or some glimmer of reality, knowing that that incredible beauty exists regardless of you, but it exists for you to see. It exists as a gift for a mankind to be able to see nature, to be able to see the rest of creation, be able to see his dog or his cat or his children or his, you know, the flower garden, you know, everything that grows and just grows around him and gives him love and gives him beauty, and, you know. And so we have to take that into consideration in order to evaluate a mystical experience. That experience is not as complex as it's made out to be. You don't have to be in a monastery for 1,500 years, you know, and bury your head in the sand, you know, and chant mantras all day long. It exists around you regardless of what you're doing. I personally see it in so many places. I see it in children, I see it in older people, I see it in the elderly, I mean, I see it in nature all around me. I find it in books, I find it in, you know, other authors, genius that speaks to one another, philosophers and mystics who defy logic, you know, defy the money machine, okay, and put out material for the sake of knowledge, put out material for the sake of people reading it. Like tonight, like putting this program for people to understand that what a mystical experience is, and to give them the knowledge of this book, you know, called Entheogens, and let me write that, Entheogens, and the Future of Religion. That's the name of this book. And so many men and women have benefited from their experimentation with drugs, especially with hallucinogens and, you know, these types of spiritual vehicles, if you will, or catalysts, that I believe for our generation now, I say our generation, meaning all who are living now, for us to ascend, for us to become enlightened, for us to break away from this prison, this third dimensional prison that we find ourselves in, we must use these kinds of tools to become enlightened. I mean, God put these plants here for us to use. He put everything here for us to use. And to deny the knowledge of our basic, those of the vehicles that trans transcend our consciousness to the higher level, and promote evolutionary enlightenment. It's wrong. I mean, to suppress this information, to suppress this, is the reason for that is because governments and the pillars of power, if you will crumble once we identify that we are the power, we are the source, we are the source. We don't need governments, we don't need anything. All we need is the trust in ourselves, the trust in God, right? And the ability to the wisdom to understand, the compassion to understand other people. And I don't know, I mean, yes, you have cannibal societies, you have militaristic societies, you know, and for us to understand and be compassionate with them, how do you do that? Well, I don't know, quite frankly. I don't know. To turn the other cheek is suicide. I don't agree with turning any cheek. I agree. I believe in facing your enemy in full force, because that's the way that your enemy will either, win over you or you win over it. And 99% of the time, when I say 100% of the time, whenever you are able to confront your enemy from within or external enemy, then it takes great courage to do that. But at the same time, that's the only way you'll ever have victory over it. You'll never have victory over it by turning the other cheek and allowing it to kill you, which is what it'll do, destroy you. Oh, this won't destroy me because I won't care it exists. Well, that's fine. You can not say that they're not chemtrailing you or that doesn't exist or they're not poisoning your food and your water, but they are. It's like you can say, well, I'm not going to die because I'll be living forever because I'm so smart. So, enlightened. Yeah. That's not true either. You can take by being enlightened, you can take measures to preserve your to protect yourself, physical and mental abuses. But this, the most powerful method that I have found, and again, it's temporary. They're temporary. But so was an aspirin, temporary. It was a psychedelic high, temporary. But mystical experiences that come from, that you seek, if you're continually seeking for mystical experiences, then those experiences will come to you. There's no question in my mind that they come to me. I know this. They're there when I want them. I see them. I feel them. I experience them. And I touch one with God continually. One with God. Because essentially that's co-creation. We create with our Creator. He's given us that ability to do so. We create our realities. We create our families. We create ourselves, our personalities. We constantly, we recreate ourselves continually by more that we learn, or more that we do, or more as the older that we get, learning, experiencing, so that, and meeting with people and sharing knowledge, sharing experiences, is all a part of our growth. It's all part of our plan. Now, there are some, of course, who are denied this, some that are deprived this, but God speaks in the heart of everyone. I should say speaks to the heart of everyone. And anyone who has ears to hear will hear his voice. They'll hear his, will see his world, will understand his world, and seek for further understanding of his world. And then once they do, then it's their obligation to teach it to others. Their obligation to write it. It's their obligation to present it in whatever form that they can, so that it gets out, you know, that it becomes viral, if you will. You know, it just one person to another person to another person, referring onward and upward. It's no different than how all these major religions began. Some people said, wow, this is wisdom, and they shared it with their families, and they shared it with their friends. Their friends said, wow, this is great, and they went on and shared it themselves, so that before we knew it, that time was evolved, and this is before, again, this is before mass communications and internet, television, radio, and every other way that we communicate today. This was all done on mouth to mouth. This was all done person to person, small groups to small groups, individual to individual. That's how learning took place. And it's still how learning takes place. That's why I'm devoting this hour and all of these hours to try to teach and try to let people understand that they have to broaden their horizons, broaden their minds. And the only way they can do that is by reading, listening, hearing, you know, letting it all come to you and absorb it. And then you can read. Then you, it's up to you to create that dialogue between right and wrong, you know, between God and man, between, you know, yourself and God. And until you do that, until you learn to do that with ease, simply, then you will always be less than what you could be. I mean, I have those restrictions. I can't help myself. I mean, I'm human like everybody else. But I understand, because of things that have happened to me in the past and successes that I've had, that the way that they became successes was because I applied myself to the pursuit of that vision, the enhancement of that vision. I've had a vision, and I want that vision to come true. How do you do it? Well, you know, you learn how to do it, and you continue to have that drive, you know, to create greater and greater things, and greater understanding, if you will, of who you are. There are people who can achieve great success, but they can't achieve personal satisfaction. They can create monster companies, but they can't save themselves. Devastating illnesses, because they don't have the faith. Though they have the faith to excel in one area, they don't have the faith in another area, which takes the same amount of time, same amount of effort. It takes as much effort to heal yourself as it does to heal somebody else. I would suggest that everybody maybe pick up this book, Etheogens and the Future of Religion, and look up the sacred mushrooms, look up all the different related mushroom articles that you can find. Peyote, natural plants that fill them, and do your own experimenting. Take a chance. Most of these things, if you buy things online, sometimes you can find them, and you'll find that, and many of them have instruction sheets with them how to use the product. What happens is people don't prepare for, they'll try it, they don't prepare for it, and so they're not really sure of what happened to them. Either they had a good trip or a bad trip. But either way, unless they prepare themselves for that moment, when they consume some psychedelic inducing chemical, whether it's a mushroom or something else, prepare yourself. You have to be prepared in your mind and in your heart and in your soul for anything. And to be ready for an explosion of your mind. I dare that you will come back from that trip the same person. Your attitudes will change tremendously. So, with that in mind, I just want to reiterate, recap here. The existence of mysticism, the existence of connecting to God personally, to the nature personally, to understanding your surroundings, understanding the people that are closest to you, understanding the miraculous nature of who you are, the miracle of who you are. And once you take that into account, consideration, and respect who you are, that you are a miracle, then everything else becomes easy. Everything, accepting everything else becomes easy. Because you understand the power of faith, as well as you understand the power of fate. That sometimes we wind up on courses that we have no clue how we got there. By accident, by luck. Taking those things into account, when you're trying to bring this back in the next few minutes to the tools that are so important to a shaman or to a truth seeker are there, in substances like I said, like marijuana, okay. The plants, psilocybin, mushrooms, sacred mushrooms, different and many, or wide array of different remedies and intoxicants and God knows everything else. So these are the things that help us or hinder us, depending if we abuse them or not. But to take things in the right context, to use them as allowing a door to open to our subconscious, right? Allowing that door to open up, and us to and to allow those things to come into it, as well as things to flow out of it, out of that door from us. And everything that flows out of us becomes a reality. It could be a haunted reality. It could be a dream. It could be a statement made better ourselves as human beings, we have to understand how these things enhance our lives. You know, how entheogens enhance our lives, enhance our minds, right? And alter our physical reality to break into alternate dimensions, parallel universes that constantly exist, and to bring light on the 90% of darkness that surrounds us. You know, to put light on that and just to show what's really there. Once you see that it's all love, one creator. Good night.